What can be done to enhance or improve family unity? Hello and welcome to Good Word. I am David Thomas, your host for this quarter. I'm happy to be with my conversation partners, Jen Ogden, who is an associate pastor at the University Church in charge of families and children and so forth, and Brant Berglund, a colleague in the School of Theology. And today we are addressing the question about family unity. What is it that builds family unity? What are the blocks to the growth of unity? I hope along the way we'll talk about the difference between unity and uniformity. Mm-hmm. There's the opportunity to talk about this word that shows up in the King James Version about submission. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about it here. That as I looked over the lesson and thought about this, it seems to me that one of the primary things, and maybe the place to start this discussion, is with the problem of self and selfishness. That if there's going to be family unity, it seems like that's got to go. What say you?
I tend to agree with that. I think selfishness is a detriment to many aspects of family unity.
How about life in general?
Well, I don't know. When I'm thinking about me, I think life is pretty great. I'm kidding.
That's fine. Confession is good for the soul. You know.
Kidding.
We say that in humor, but the truth of the matter is that all of us are oriented to tend to self.
Absolutely.
But,
yes, I think we are.
But that proclivity among human beings does not build unity.
It does not.
And the very phrase here, family unity, assumes a couple things. Number one, a family is made up of two or more people. And then the unity means that they don't naturally want to see things or do see things the same way, experience the world the same way, have the same goals or values. And then how do we create a sense of oneness in that group? That's difficult.
Yeah.
No question, that's difficult.
It seems to me at the root of this is a subject that has fascinated me for quite a while, that has to do with this whole idea of autonomy. You know, we today are highly individualistic and we all want to be autonomous human beings. You know, that focusing on myself is supposed to be the pathway to authenticity and the real me. And, you know, when people live autonomously or they bid for autonomous existence, they do not put themselves in a position to be collegial. See, and it seems to me that in cultures and societies that thrive, there's a central core of ideas around which people gather. They adopt these ideas, and then they work to minimize their differences and their autonomy in the interest of what we used to call the common good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's an idea that I think can play out very well in families. Okay, that if we envision ourselves as families, as a family, our goal is to promote the common good. How can we all thrive? And the maintenance of strict autonomy, and I'm going to go my own way, mitigates against that.
Mm-hmm. In other words, we have to recognize where our own interests are at odds with that of the good of others around us, and maybe relinquish those.
Yes, and you know, the old word that nobody likes to hear anymore is the word of sacrifice or self-sacrifice. And I remember hearing years ago when I still had children at home, and this was so true, is that, you know, your family prospers if you're the dad or the mom or whatever it is, that your family prospers when you sacrifice your own personal interests for the common interest. See, and if everybody does that, it seems like that's the best prospect we have of family unity growing and a sense of cohesion developing that makes for a good family life.
Mm-hmm. I think that takes a deep sense of self-awareness and realizing that there is a differentiation in our goals as individuals within a family. And I don't know that we're always really aware of that. And I think building self-awareness is going to help with the ability to have the idea of a common goal or common good or all of those sorts of things.
But I would not equate self-awareness and autonomy. Self-awareness is merely a development of a sense of who I am and how I'm going to function in life and where I want to go and how I collaborate with other people along the way.
It seems that the unity requires also a strong ability to communicate with one another. And if somebody's own explored self-interests are at odds with the family, unity, somebody should be able to say something but in a way that's meaningful, that's helpful, mm-hmm. that's not demeaning or derogatory, but also then the other person's duty to listen and to accept.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I mentioned at the very beginning here is this whole question of submission, because there is a school of thought that establishes families as a hierarchical system mm-hmm. where in this case a man is in charge and then his wife is supposed to borrow King James, to submit and so forth. And I think we should talk about that, because I think that idea is not only unbiblical, but it's done a lot of damage yes. to people. Any comments on this idea of submission?
I think anything that says one must be subservient based on a single characteristic is a dangerous ideology. That you must be subservient because you are a woman,
oh.
or because you are black, or because you are young, or because you are whatever, pick your characteristic. Anything that says you must listen and obey whatever is told without yeah. question, without pushback, without any sort of feedback, that's a very dangerous ideology. And I think we see it crop up in very nasty ways in the idea of men being in charge of the family in very restrictive, punitive, and hostile ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because what does a good godly man do if his wife is not properly submissive?
Well,
this is a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, that leads and has led to the mistreatment of women.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the ideal is not found in the word submission, but in the Genesis story where you find Adam and Eve established as companions. And I like yeah. to read that story once in a while. And if you read between the lines, it's very clear that Adam was totally excited when he saw Eve, because he realized that God had given him a companion who was every bit his equal and was going to participate in life.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I mean, my favorite definition of a spouse is that a spouse is somebody God gives you to show you a completely different way of living. But you know, you see the joy in that text to the point where he's willing to leave his father and mother, which he didn't have. But I mean, in a patriarchal society, to say that a man should leave his father and mother and cleave or hold on to his wife is an astonishing thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, mm-hmm. you know, to see this somehow adulterated to the idea that women should be subservient really is I think, a highly problematical thing that sadly crept into Christianity and remains there.
Well, and part of the challenge is we don't read the passages in which the submission of, for instance, wives and husbands, we don't read the passages within their full context. And one of those is Ephesians 5:22 that says, wives being subject to your own husbands, mm-hmm. but the previous verse says, be subject to one another in the fear of Christ. Mm-hmm. And so when Paul's words to Ephesus, where women were certainly in some ways, if we read 1 Timothy 2 the same way, there were some problems in Ephesus where women were domineering over their husbands. And Paul says, no, women need to be as submissive to their husbands as men are one to another. And because there was a serious problem in Ephesus, and Paul had to correct it because the opposite had become true.
Yeah. But I think you make a very interesting point that the real operative verse in Ephesians there is verse 21.
It's 21,
22.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing how many mm-hmm. people never read verse 21.
Yeah. Now, we do have a challenge, and I'll admit that the same word, the Greek word hupotassomai here, is also found in the book of 1 Peter, and there it says, slaves, be subject, the exact same word, to your masters, even when they mistreat you. So there is a sense in which we, if we're followers of Jesus, are called, and I'm not saying that certain races or genders ever are called to, mm-hmm. you know, to be mistreated, but I am saying that if we find ourselves in a place of mistreatment, that Jesus was also mistreated and subjected himself to it willingly.
Yeah, so we shouldn't respond in kind is the point.
Absolutely.
Yes.
But so the word hupotassomai has some deep meaning for us if we're followers of Jesus.
But I think the context in Ephesians there is very clear that Paul is talking about what I used to refer to as deferential reciprocity. You know, that there is reciprocal deference in a good relationship,
mm-hmm.
Depending on how invested a person is in something or where the skills are, where the interests are. And so I defer, you defer, you defer, I defer. And this mutual reciprocal deference allows for family unity to prosper instead of one person domineering over another one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to get us also to talk about unity and uniformity, because when you talk about family unity, some people read it as a uniformity, and I wonder if you have any comments about the difference between unity and uniformity.
Have you ever watched baseball?
Once in a while.
Okay. There are teams within baseball, and I find it very easy to understand a family as a team. Ultimately, they have the same goal. They want to win, right? They want to win, and whatever that winning is going to differ
by
family
fair
to
means
family.
Only.
Right, exactly. Honestly, right. They can't deflate baseballs. but they want to win, and whatever that goal is for the family, you know, sending children to college, raising happy, healthy, balanced adults, whatever the goal is, they want to win. And on game days, they wear uniforms to identify themselves as a family. How do we, A, identify ourselves as a family to others, and B, how do we aim for the same goals? And I think that's really important that we understand the difference in that. How do I represent myself as my father's child or my mother's child? I don't look like them all the time. I definitely don't dress like them. Dad does that socks and sandals thing.
Oh, that's a Northwest. That's a
Northwest. It's a terrible thing.
With you.
Nope, not going to happen. So right, there's things that say we can still be on the same team, and occasionally we're going to show up and we're going to look very similar, right? But we're not the same person. And I think so often uniformity is saying we are going to behave in exactly the same way, and you're going to do exactly what I say when, and it becomes much more about control than
and
it does
about. If you don't do it, you've destroyed
goal.
Family unity.
Yes.
Well, now if
exactly.
if we take your analogy one step further, we can also say that if you had a whole team of pitchers and that was your whole team, you'd be in trouble.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't win. And thus everybody has a different role perhaps within the family as well. And this gets uncomfortable because family roles sometimes are biologically based. You know, if you have children and a mother says, "Hey, I want to breastfeed the children," well, that the man does not have the option at this point to do that, right? So there are certainly some roles that come with family, but if we're all working for the same goal, we'll find ways to love and support each other as we go through that process of winning.
You know, I once saw a cover of a magazine that talked about cookie cutter Christians and had this, you know, some rolled out dough and a little one of those cookie stamp things that cuts them all exactly the same.
Yeah.
And it was a very robust and useful discussion about the difference between unity and uniformity, because unity is actually an internal compulsion that grows biblically by the work of the Holy Spirit. It's a sense that we are in this together and we will share a common life. Uniformity is, as you said, is everybody has to do the same thing the same way at the same time. And if you don't do it, astonishingly, that is what damages unity. Well, I don't see how uniformity is even related to unity. Unity enables very different people to share a common cause and gather around it without tearing at each other over
together.
Whatever differences they might have.
And uniformity, Dave, often has a sense of pressure from outside that enforces it from their perspective. And I think that, Jen, is what you were saying. You know, in a husband-wife relationship or parent-child, or there's a sense of dominance. There is no place for that within the Christian faith.
If there is a drive for dominance going on, I would say something's wrong.
Yeah.
Something's wrong somewhere. If somebody's trying to be the boss, there's something wrong in that dynamic.
So,
hey, well, thank you very much for an interesting discussion. We will be closing down here, and thank you, Jen and Brant, for your interesting participation here. My thanks to our engineer, Brad Williams, and my thanks also to those of you who listen to the Good Word for Good Word. I'm Dave Thomas.